We're really lucky here this morning to have some veteran parents here, Joe and Cindy Boddy. Joe works here at our church, and he is in charge of the student ministries. And so not only has he had the personal experience with his three kids, but he also has an awareness of kids in all over our ministry and stuff. And then also Cindy teaches at our school at Calumet, and so she also has some experience with kids also. And so they are going to come up here this morning and share about working and staying at home moms. But I'm going to open us up with a word of prayer, and then we'll bring them up. God, we're really grateful that you love us enough to give us these kids, that this is a really hard job, and yet you don't expect us to do this alone, that you want to guide us and direct us, that you give us your word, you give us our friends to help us, and that we can really be able to look to you for support and guidance. And so we just really pray this morning, God, that you would give each of these women here what it is you want them to walk away with, God. Thank you that you're personal with each one of us. And I do really pray, God, that afterwards, too, that we can hang out, be able to meet some people, and really just be able to get the support that we need. Amen.
Hi. Thanks for having us. I guess I can see it back there. Okay. I thought we'd first, it's kind of hard to see our font. Sorry about that. But I thought we'd first introduce our families that we grew up in, because we did not grow up in Christian homes. So that will kind of give you some hope, if you didn't grow up in a Christian home, how to have a Christian family. My background, family, again, was not Christian. It was moral. There was morals, but it was not a Christian home. My dad was abusive. He left when I was four or five, and so they didn't get a divorce, though, until I was a junior in high school. So it was a long, drawn-out, really nasty endeavor. So I was raised by a single parent, my mom. And when my dad left, I found this out later on. She didn't tell us at the time. But I found out later on in life that when my dad left her, she felt like she was in a big black pit. And she cried out to God, and that's when she started her relationship with God and said to him, if you can get me out of this pit and raise these children, then I will dedicate my life to you. And he answered that, totally. Joe's family, as you can tell, is Italian. That's Joe right there. He's a twin of the one far on the far left. His background is, those are his parents, very Italian. Not a Christian home again. He grew up in an alcoholic home, and they were raised Italian Catholic, and so there was a lot of arguing going on. I remember the first time that I met his family. If you've ever seen the old movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, his family was the Greek, my family was the boring one. And I had never heard so much arguing in my life. So that was his family background. These are our kids, Tom and Michelle, then Daniel, then Jenny and Tyler. Our kids that we raised were Michelle, Jenny, and Daniel. And we are so thankful that our girls have married strong Christian men, and those are prayers that we prayed when they were babies. And so I'm just so thankful that God answers. He's so faithful. And this is the verse that reminds me of that. In Psalm 100, verse 5, the Lord is good. His unfailing love continues forever, and his faithfulness continues to each generation. That one's a little off up there, so I can't finish it. And, you know, if any of you are single parents, I have a special burden because of my mom raising us. And I hope I can get through this without crying. Shoot. You knew it. My mom passed away 3 years ago. Excuse me. And I found in her Bible, I found a prayer that she prayed. And this is it. She said, "Father, I cannot comprehend who you are. My mind cannot grasp all the things about you, but I do know that you worked a miracle in my life as I look back on my life. You not only answer our prayers, but you go above and beyond what we ask for. You've blessed my family. My son and daughter are believers. Their spouses are believers. And all my grandchildren are believers. This is a miracle because of the background that I came from." She said, "I don't know how you did it. My prayers are puny, but you put it all together. I thank you for how you worked in my children's lives and their spouses' lives. They're actively reaching out to the people around them and doing your work. No person would be able to work all this out, but you are able to do this. Thank you for blessing my life." So if you're a single mom at all, God has your back. And just turn to him, because he will get you through anything. I mean, it's a miracle. I can't believe how how God honored my mom's prayer. Whew, okay, so we're not experts, that's for sure. And we're just going to share with you this morning what we have learned along the way. We've made many errors. And I think the biggest burden I have about speaking to you this morning is that this is impossible to do without God. God created our kids. He is the author of them, and he has a plan for them. And so we need him in our life to raise our kids the way he wants us to. And we need community. I can't imagine raising our family without the people that invested in our kids. So that's my burden there. So when I was deciding whether to work or stay at home, I had a lot of issues. I loved my job. I was a teacher. I loved my career. I went to school for it. And when I mentioned to my dad that I was going to be staying at home with children, this was his response. What a waste of education. So that kind of was like in the back of my mind. I'm like, oh, wow. You know, he paid for my education. I'm letting him down. I had lots of fears. Joe was, at that time that we were deciding, he wasn't working for the church yet, and we didn't even know he was going to be, and he was an insurance agent, and it was a good income, but it was not consistent. So it was like some months it was not there, other months it was, and you had, you know, it was really hard. And I thought, how the hell are we going to do this? I was afraid we wouldn't have money. I was afraid we were going to be in a poorhouse. I was afraid we weren't going to be able to provide. So lots of fears there. Lots of fears about whether I could be a good mom or not. Didn't know what a Christian home looked like, so I had no idea what I was doing. Many misconceptions about what parenting is. So I sought advice from people. And after praying about it, I decided, okay, I'm going to take a step of faith, a huge step of faith, and I'm just going to trust. And I look back now, I have no regrets. I am so, so thankful that I did that, even though I had no idea how he was going to provide for us and how it was all going to work out. What I learned was what parenting is not. Parenting is not a hindrance to my life or career. It's actually a great career. It's not a frustrating obstacle to real ministry. These kids are our ministry, part of it. An under-challenging occupation? Nope. A job too small for an intelligent, capable human being? No. It's not also making sure my kids behave so I look good. It's not making sure my kids are always happy and get what they want. It's not making sure my kids succeed in this world. Not making sure I do everything perfect for my children. Good luck if you have that one. And making sure that my kids are free from any suffering. That's not going to happen. They are going to suffer. What is parenting? This is what I had to learn. What was my vision? And I read a lot of books. I picked a lot of people's brains because I had no idea what I was doing. And so what I found was it was the most important job I could ever do. And that's from God's point of view. He says, children are gifts and rewards. He says this in Psalm 127. Children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from him. Children born to a young man are like arrows in a warrior's hands. How joyful is a man whose quiver is full of them. It's an important role. God considers it highly important. He says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be, you shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. I mean, he didn't leave any time out. It's like all the time you are teaching these to your children. In Psalm 78, he says, we will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders, which he commanded our fathers, and they should teach them to their children that the generation to come might know, even the children yet to be born, that they may arise and tell them to their children, that they should put their confidence in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. This book was life-changing for me. Andrew Murray's book on Bring Your Children to Christ. Actually, we have a paper that has all the resources, different books that we read and stuff that you can get after. He says, it was God's plan for the family with its love and training of the children to reflect the fellowship of God's home and the love of the Father in heaven. That is a huge role. We are reflecting God to our children. We are setting their foundation for who God is, the God of the universe. He gave that to us, that role. I can't believe that he would entrust that to us. In this book, Mistaken Identity, these authors say, family and other relationships are important to the development, what I call one's private God. No child arrives at the house of God without his pet God under his arm. And for some of us, this pet God we tied on to our heart, a leash to our hearts, is not very nice, nor is it biblically accurate. This is because our negative images of God are often rooted in our emotional hurts and our destructive patterns of relating to people that we carry with us from our past. It's because we are setting our kids' view of God by how we are with them. That's a huge role. It's also a blessing to be a parent. In Proverbs 31, she or he, see, we have a gentleman, she carefully watches everything in her household and suffers nothing from laziness. Her children stand and bless her. Her husband praises her. There are many virtuous and capable women in the world, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty does not last, but a woman who fears the Lord will be greatly praised. And even, you know, I think of my mom. She didn't have a husband that was praising her. Her husband left her, but she was praised. At that funeral, she was praised because of what she gave her heart to God, and God did wonderful things through her. This book, What is a Family by Edith Schaefer, I highly recommend that. This is what helped me understand what a Christian family would look like. She says over and over again, someone in a relationship needs to consider the family as a career and a project. Serious enough to be willing to be the one to scramble up over the jagged rocks to free the birds so they don't become extinct. Taking on the career of being a mother and a wife is a fabulous, rare life work in the 20th century and a very challenging job. A wasted effort? A thankless job? An undignified slave? No. A most exciting possibility of turning the tide, of saving the species, of affecting history, of doing something that will be felt and heard in ever-widening circles. That is our role. That is awesome. We get to do this. Not our culture's view, though. Many of you, I'm sure, are at home with your kids, right? And this is some of the comments I got being a stay-at-home mom when I was talking to my friends who either didn't have kids or they were not knowing God or whatever. What do you do all day long? Do you ever get that? It's like, oh, I just eat bonbons, watch TV. I had a neighbor when we were living, when Michelle was first born, a neighbor who worked next door. She didn't know God, and she was like, saw me outside sitting by the little baby pool with Michelle, and she goes, oh, I wish I could do that all day. I was like, good Lord. How nice it must be not to have to get up and work every day like I have to. I wish I could stay home like you. Someone has to work and pay the bills. What about all that education we paid for? So, you know, our culture is not in the same line as what God in his heart. It's like a river, you know. Our culture is going in one direction, and we have to swim up without looking like some fundy, okay? You know, he wants us to be in the world, not of it. And so that's a fine line to walk, to have to fight the current, but not, you know, love, but still love the people in the world. So God's purpose for parenting is so much different than what the world says. God has a purpose for the family. That's the first thing. You got to realize your family, the way your family is made, is God has a purpose for it. In this book, A Mother's Heart by Jean Fleming, another book I highly recommend, was life-changing. I liked her book because a lot of parenting books make the family, that's it. It's just about your family. And she was a missionary, and so she had a view for ministry. She had a view for, my family has a purpose outside of just my family. And she said, we must recognize that God has a purpose for the family. The Christian family is not an island. It's not intended to be an end in itself, but rather a means to a greater end. God wants the Christian family involved in his purpose and aim and plan. God's purpose is to provide the best possible environment for our kids to develop. She says this, God established the family as the best possible environment for human development. In God's plan, the family provides a secure and loving framework in which to nourish the child emotionally, intellectually, physically, and spiritually. The family is called to provide nurture, instruction, and discipline. That's our job. He also wants us to love him and get our children to know who God is and have love for him and love for your neighbor. This is based on two commandments. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And the second is like it. You shall love the neighbor as yourself. I mean, that's our role to our children. No Christian family is meant to live behind a moat filled with water and a drawbridge swung up at out of reach. To protect your family life to this extent is to save your family life is in complete selfishness. It is to lose it in the end. There's nothing that is more helpful for your own children than they're becoming involved in compassion for people. There's nothing more beneficial for your children than discovering how exciting it is to know that someone has passed from darkness to light because of the time spent in your home. To find that happiness really comes in the midst of seeing someone else helped, especially if helped to find eternal life, as well as to begin to have a changed life, teaches the whole family what life is all about. And we had this opportunity when our kids were little. We had, Daniel was one, I think, Jenny three or four, and Michelle was seven. There was this girl that was in the high school ministry, and her mom, she was from a divorced home. She lived with her mom, and her mom told her that I'm moving, and you're going to have to find a place to live. And so this young lady went to her youth worker and said, hey, I need a place to live. So we were approached to take her in. And lots of things went through my mind. I was like, how am I going to do this? She's also a teenager. Teenage life kind of scares me. And but what I felt, you know, after we prayerfully considered it and took her in, it was such a blessing to not only us, you know, to our kids. I couldn't believe it because she was such a good example of someone that can walk with the Lord during their teenage life and not rebel. And I was like, oh my God, you just gave this vision to my children. This is awesome. And then he provided her a home, which beyond my belief that he would see our family as a wholesome family, that she could see what Christian family is like, and gave her a vision for her life. It was a great blessing. I had no idea that that's how God was going to do that. The world's purpose, love the world. That's what that river is going to be for our kids. That's the, you know, it says in 1 John, don't love the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the boastful pride of life. That was what is going to be coming at our children. Conform to the world, right? Romans 12, 2, do not be conformed to the world. This is what the river is taking our children down. That's what the enemy wants. We want to prove what the will of God is, that it's good and acceptable and perfect. So on this river, we got to swim upstream. How are we going to do this? Well, we're going to value what God values instead of what the world values. What does he value? He values relationship, right? Love the Lord, love people. That's his value. A family is a formation center of human relationships. The family is the place where the deep understanding that people are significant, important, worthwhile, with a purpose in life should be learned at an early age. The family is the place where children should learn that human beings have been made in the image of God and therefore very special in the universe. He also values character, our kids' inner character, attitudes. The family is a place where loyalty, dependability, trustworthiness, compassion, sensitivity to others, thoughtfulness, unselfishness are supposed to have their roots. Someone must take the initiative and use imagination to intentionally teach these things. What does this world value? What's this river that's trying to take our kids down? Power and position, right? Be the most popular. Best athlete, best artist, best musician, best this, best that. Best student, prestigious profession, self is first and center. That's what the river is taking them. But God says, be a servant. That's what he wants our children to be. This world values externals, physical beauty, best body, outward behavior, so that they look good. But what does God say? He values the heart, what's going on in the heart. In our kids' heart. This world values wealth, material things, right? Best schools and colleges. Make sure your kids. I could not believe when our kids were in high school, the pressure that was on. We ran into this lady. I was with Michelle, and we were at the mall, and we ran into this lady who also had kids at Centennial, and she's like, how many schools have you visited? And I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, how many colleges have you visited? And I'm like, none. She's going to go to OSU. Oh, I was like, good Lord. I'm glad she wants to stay in town. It was just incredible. Best scholarships to get rich, right? Accumulate things. Well, this is what God says. Godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. He wants our kids to be content with what they have. For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it. You know, there is no U-Haul truck that goes with us to heaven. It's just us. If we have food and covering with these, we shall be content. And we see, but those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. We don't want our kids to pierce themselves with many griefs because of the love of money and that river that wants to take them down it. We have to fight against this. Temporal things, that's what the world calls for. Perfect circumstances, comfort, avoiding all suffering, giving what they want rather than what's good for them. But God is into the eternal things. He says, therefore, don't lose heart, but though the outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day, for the momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory, far beyond all comparison. While we look at not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. We have to keep those in the forefront of our mind. Matthew 6, you know, don't lay up treasures that can rust and rot. But store for your treasures in heaven where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves cannot break in. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. So we need to value what God values. And Joe's going to come up and talk about quality versus quantity time.
Whoa. Well, good morning. It's a beautiful day out, isn't it? So quality versus quantity time, that used to be heavily debated a few decades ago. And I actually think it's both. Kids need our guidance, protection, and nurture. Mom turns her back. No sooner does she turn her back than her child spills his milk all over the place. And so kids need attention. She goes down, does the laundry. She comes back upstairs, and the kids are fighting. Kids need a lot of time and attention, and it's just the way it is. And so I think our kids need both time, they need quality and quantity. They also need loving discipline, which does take a lot of time and energy. Here is what Madeline Levine said. She wrote a book called Price of Privilege. Some of you have probably read this book. Excuse me. She's a psychologist, psychiatrist, and author. She says, busy parents already feel guilty about the little time they have to spend with their children. Few of them want to waste time in conflict and anger, and as a result are often only too happy to sidestep discipline issues. And I think it's very tempting to do. The unfortunate result is that children do not learn how to take responsibility, control their impulses, or be thoughtful. Yeah, I believe that's true. And so I also think it's very difficult to have quality time if you don't have the quantity time. I think it's almost impossible. I think both go together. If you have little quantity time, I think it puts more pressure on the parents, more stress on them to make it quality time. And so when you have that time, then all of a sudden there's this pressure. Okay, it's got to be really good. And with kids, gee whiz, you never know what's going to happen. I think it also puts more pressure and anxiety on the child because they know with whatever time they do have with parents, it's going to be short, and they don't know exactly when their next time is going to be with their parent. And so I think it takes both quality and quantity time. They both work together. You can't really have one without the other. The relationship needs quality time. Here's what Levine writes. Warmth is the quality of involvement, understanding, acceptance, and love that parents communicate on different levels in an ever-evolving ways as their children grow. Children and warm, connected parents are better adjusted. Oh, that makes total sense, doesn't it? And it takes time to develop that relationship with your kids so that they feel connected with you. And that's what you're aiming for as a parent. You want to have a connection, an emotional connection, a spiritual connection, physical connection with your kids. With friends, we listen long enough to know what it feels like to be in their shoes. Too often with our children, we rush in and offer suggestions, propose alternatives, or solve problems, and we're not really hearing our kids or getting to know our kids. And so I think that brings up the question of non-parental care considerations. Many families need to go this route to one degree or another, and it is what it is. And I think my point here is that whatever time you do have, throw yourself into it with your kids. Try to do whatever you can to garner all your resources and throw them into your kids and give them what they need. And try to minimize non-parental care, especially daycare. Try to minimize it. Studies are out that aren't too positive about daycare. This is an article from Psychology Today, The Trouble with Daycare, Heidi Lang, 2005. And she says, few parents have heard about the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development study of early child care. An ongoing $100 million survey of 1,200 children, it's the largest and most rigorous examination of daycare in history. Taking into account family income and the quality of daycare, evidence from this study shows that the total number of hours a child is without a parent from birth through preschool matters. The more time in child care of any kind or quality, the more aggressive the child is, according to the results published in Child Development. And so they accounted for socioeconomic status, quality of care, all these other factors, and it just the results came in that try to minimize time in daycare. Children in full-time daycare were close to 3 times more likely to show behavior problems than those cared for by their mothers at home. Wow. Although Belsky's harsh words haven't won him many friends, some researchers think he has a point. Belsky was the guy who was a daycare advocate, but then as he looked at these studies and looked at the facts and analyzed all the research, he changed his mind. And that created a big frenzy, a lot of fighting with daycare advocates. Kathy McCartney, an education professor at Harvard and another NICHD daycare researcher, concedes the aggression results are significant, but won't offer cautionary advice without more research. So far, it's looking like he's right, says McCartney, who criticized Belsky's claim in the past. Long hours in childcare are associated with behavioral problems. And Carl Zinsmeister, who was the education and labor, home advisor to a former president, he said, Belsky now urges that if at all possible, a parent stay home with children less than 2 years old and calls for government help to make it that easier. Belsky also was advocating, if you're going to do daycare, try to keep it at 20 hours or less. The negative statistics jump up significantly if a child's in daycare more than 20 hours a week. That's 4 hours a day. That's a long time. We want our children to attach to the parents. You've probably read some stuff on attachment theory. The goal is to create a secure attachment with your child. And that's why we want to try to minimize non-parental care so that the parents can actually attach to the child. John Bowlby, who was a British psychologist and psychoanalyst, he's the father of attachment theory. He believed that early childhood attachments played a critical role in later development and mental functioning. His work, along with the work of another psychologist, Mary Ainsworth, contributed to the development of attachment theory. Bowlby shared the psychoanalytical view that early experiences in childcare are important for influencing development and behavior later in life. They've done these studies that show to the degree a child attaches to his parents in the first couple years affects that child for the rest of his life. No matter what you do, there's nothing you can do to change it. Bonds are created. The level of attachment is created those first 2 years, those first 2 or 3 years, especially the first year. And the level of attachment that you attained that first year or two carries that level of attachment all the way through life. And they've done longitudinal studies on this, and the results are pretty convincing. Our early childhood styles of attachment are established in childhood throughout the whole life. While forming a secure attachment with caregivers is normal and expected, as Hazen and Shaver have noted, it doesn't always happen. Researchers have found a number of different factors that contribute to the development, or lack thereof, of secure attachment, particularly a mother's responsiveness to her infant's needs during the first year of a child's life. And so that's why we say try to do whatever you can to minimize non-parental care with young children. Bowlby believed that the earliest bonds formed by children with their caregivers have a tremendous impact that continues throughout their life. So try to minimize non-parental care, especially daycare. Now, switch gears a little bit. It's important for us, I think, as parents, to spend one-on-one time with our children, have a date with our children. Try to get it in weekly, every other week. If you can't do that, at least try to get a monthly date with each of your kids. I think that's moms and dads alike. And I feel like this helps build attachment. It helps build a healthy relationship between you and your child. I grew up in a family of five children, and so it was like war zone all the time. My parents didn't get one-on-one time with each kid. I'm not sure they knew exactly what they were doing. I grew up in a pretty dysfunctional home. And I think that hurt. I think it's a lot better, you know, in a family there's sibling rivalry, there's fighting that goes on, and it's nice to get the kid out of that environment, and you and your child actually have your one-on-one time together. You have a date together, and it's something that they can count on, something that they can really look forward to. I think they need this. Start young, make it fun, make it relational, and make it spiritual. Here is what Chapman and Campbell said in their book, The Five Love Languages of Children. In raising children, everything depends on the love relationship between parent and child. Nothing works well if a child's love needs are not met. Only the child who feels genuinely loved and cared for can do her best. That's so true. Love brings out the best in people, doesn't it? Yeah. Here's just some age levels, and some things you can do. You probably have some really good ideas yourself, so I'm probably not telling you anything new. But I think it's important when your children are very young to get them to interact with nature, to touch and feel. Get your infants out on the grass. When Michelle was, maybe 6 or 9 months old, I used to put her on my shoulders and go in the backyard and have her just touch the leaves on the tree and go, oh, and put her down on the grass and have her crawl around and stuff. I think it's really cool to get your kids in touch with nature, touch and feel. Also, I think it's good to help do things that will develop their creativity and their problem-solving skills, which I think probably most every parent in this room does. Lots of make-believe stories, dolls, problem solving, like riding a tricycle and figuring out how to negotiate it. We used to have this thing, we used to make up so many stories and tell stories. We had this thing called Allie the Alligator and his friends. And Allie the Alligator had this gang of friends, Tommy the Turtle, Timmy the Tree, and the kids got to name their own character. And we would just tell stories about their adventures and stuff. And I really believe this helps develop creativity in kids. You want them to associate you with fun. You don't want them to associate you as like the head schoolmaster. You want them to see you as fun to be with, and they're excited to be with you. Now, ages 5 to 10, I think it's important to try to help develop their emotional life. With our oldest daughter, Michelle, when she hit elementary school, and maybe kindergarten, through her whole elementary school, Monday after school was our time together, so I would pick her up after school. And our thing was, we would go to White Castle down the street in Clintonville and get French fries and talk about her day. And try to absorb all of her frustrations, because she had a lot of stuff she wanted to talk about. So you're trying to help develop their emotional life by absorbing their frustrations and helping them to talk through their frustrations. Also, teaching them how to celebrate the good things. Then we would, after that, we'd go to the downtown public library. We'd play on their computers, those detective games like Carmen Sandiego. I don't know if you guys remember that when you were little. And that was our thing. And then we'd pray a little bit together, maybe read some Bible stories together, and then come home and then tell Mom all about our time together. That was awesome. This is an age where also you want to continue with the fun and creativity. Daniel and I, he's our youngest. every Saturday morning, is when he was just a really little kid, toddler, we'd go to Tim Hortons, and we'd play Hot Wheels on the tables of Tim Hortons. It was a blast. One time, we were just driving around trying to find a good spot to hang out. We found a school with this massive dirt pile, and so we got his tractors, little toy trucks and tractors, and we played on that dirt pile, you know, for an hour or two, and we did that several times. It was fun. Just, you know, simple things. They don't have to cost a lot of money. Better than shipping them off to a soccer for toddlers team or something like that. Way better. They're getting one-on-one focus time with you. You get to have this relationship with them. It's really sweet. I think moms, try to get your husbands to do this if they're not doing this. Try to get them to have that one-on-one time. Try to also help them cultivate their interests. With Jenny, my time with her when she was in elementary school, and I think also in middle school, it was Sunday mornings at Bob Evans. We would sit at the counter. We'd have the same waitress every week. And she's like, "What are you going to have, honey?" Like, "We'll have the usual." And then after we would have a little breakfast, it would be time for Jenny to do her projects. We always had projects going. She was a project girl. One time we tried to build this. She was also like to take care of animals, and so she had gerbils. So we tried to build a portable gerbil cage that she could take around to her friends, and it also would include a maze so gerbils could try to figure out how to get out of the maze, and hinges and everything so it would fold up like a suitcase and she could take it with her and stuff. That didn't work out too well. I think the gerbils got away. I didn't do a very good job of craftsmanship. But it was fun. And even if it didn't succeed, it was fun doing it together. Continue on with nature, creaking, fishing, seeing what you can find in nature, reading nature books with them. Keeping it fun. Daniel and I had maybe a month-long project where we spent 3 weeks for our time together, each building our own little boat. We'd saw up wood, lightweight wood, design our boat, saw up the wood, glue it together, put a sail on the boat. And our plan was we would take the boats to the Olentangy River and see if they would sail and float, and then be on the side and be on the bank of the river, grab rocks, and try to hit the other guy's boat and try to sink it. And he wasn't too happy when I sank his boat. But make it fun, and you can be creative. I think when you're trying to spend your time with your kids, trying to have family time, trying to have your own one-on-one time with your kids, it's going to be less time for organized sports. There's just not going to be time to do that. And I personally would rather be the one spending the time with the kids than shipping them off and having another coach spend time with my kids. And when we did finally get them in organized sports, they were probably 9 or 10 years old. I was a coach, whether the head coach or the assistant, but I was there getting involved. And also developing the spiritual side, reading and praying together at bedtime is especially sweet. There's the two girls there. Then ages 11 to 14, I think what would characterize this age when they're in middle school would be to disciple your child. And you can do that. You don't have to have someone else do it. You can do it. You can take part in discipling your own child. You can read together. Go to a coffee shop, restaurant. You can read there. 4th Street Cafe. Find the age-appropriate books. Your kids will do it, and you want to start young. Of course, you want to start reading with your kid before age 11 because you realize if they are readers and they also read Christian books and read the Bible, later on they're going to be in good shape. So you're trying to train them because you want them to be readers of Scripture and readers of Christian books later on. So get them started reading Christian books for kids or kids' Bibles when they're little. When Daniel was in middle school, I became a cell group leader. And I was able to disciple him and his friend Ben. And so every Saturday morning, we would go to McDonald's, get a to-go thing of McDonald's. We'd go to 4th Street Cafe, and we would read books on apologetics and other Christian books for students. And it was great. So we'd eat our food, we'd read our book, we'd talk about the cell group, we'd talk about their lives, pray together. It was awesome. And then we would help them with their outreach too. So you're trying to disciple your kid. I remember Jenny, when she was maybe halfway toward the end of her middle school, she was starting to have doubts about her faith. Like, well, how do you know, Dad, that this is real? And I was like, where is this coming from? And I came to find out that she was being challenged by another middle schooler at her school who wasn't a believer. And so I was like, all right, I know what to do. So we started getting into some apologetical books on reasons to believe, and it was great. And so things really started to click. We'd read something, she'd say, that's it, that's what, I'm going to go back to that girl and tell her this. So it was awesome. You can disciple your kid when they're in middle school. And you want to make it relational, you want to make it spiritual, and you want to make it fun. With Michelle, our oldest, when she got into middle school, our night was Saturday night, and so I would take her to dinner, read at the restaurant, Christian book, and then take her to a movie. And we did that every Saturday night. And man, I hated parting with the money. I'm a cheapskate. And it really, and it's not like we had tons of money, so it was really, really difficult. But today, I'm so glad I spent the money. Spend the money, take the time, and minimize regrets. I have a lot of regrets about some things I did in parenting, and it's kind of sad at times, but then those regrets are minimized and mitigated by the fact that I know I spent time with my kids. And so that really helps with the regrets. I think this is a profound passage in Proverbs chapter 3 from Solomon. He said, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due. Do not say, go and come back tomorrow and I will give it, when you actually have it with you. And as parents, we have it with us, don't we? We have time. We shouldn't withhold it from our kids. We should give them the time. And if your time is a little bit more limited because you're working, what time you do have, give it. And you're going to need that investment for the teenage rebellion years. So this is when you're spending time with your kids, when they're young, this is money in the bank, man. I remember with Michelle, you mentioned our night was Saturday night. Well, when she turned 16, she was like, Dad, I think we're done with our time together. I don't want to do this anymore. I was like, it really hurt. I was really bummed out. And I think she was being tempted by stuff at school, and she was hanging around a not-so-good crowd at school. And about a year and a half later, she came back, and she's like, Dad, can we spend our time together again? It was awesome. And I was like, it just came out of the blue. I was like, what? She's like, yeah, will you teach me the Bible? I'm so thankful for her high school leaders because they were there. When she didn't want to take it from me, she was taking it from them. And so I just can't impress upon you enough the value of getting your kids in a group and getting them discipled by a high school leader. Boy, I'm so thankful for that. Family time. Trying to get dinner together most nights, I think, is important. We didn't get to dinner together every single night, but maybe four or five nights a week we did, and it was good. Here is what Ann Fischel, PhD, she's associate clinical professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School. Here's what she said. Over the past 15 years, researchers have confirmed what parents have known for a long time. Sharing a family meal is good for the spirit, the brain, and the health of all family members. Recent studies link regular family dinners with many behaviors that parents pray for: lower rates of substance abuse, teen pregnancy and depression, as well as higher grade point averages and self-esteem. Studies also indicate that dinner conversations are a more potent vocabulary booster than reading and stories told around the kitchen table and help our children build resilience. The icing on the cake is that regular family meals also lower rates of obesity and eating disorders in children and adolescents, something we have a huge problem with today. What else can families do that takes only about an hour a day and packs such a punch? I believe this is true. Try to get as many family dinners as possible. We did a lot of after-dinner games with the whole family. not every night or anything. You know, usually maybe a couple times a week we'd go on our court. We'd play kickball, wiffle ball, and Cindy would even get out there and play with us. During bad weather, we'd play board games inside, and so all of us used to pick on Cindy and playing Monopoly and usually win. A lot of crafts. You know, it doesn't have to be 4 hours or something like that. Maybe just 45 minutes after dinner, hanging out. I think, too, this is going to call for limiting school sports, because school sports, the coaches want your whole life. They want your kids' life. And we tried to limit it to one sport a year for our kids. I think we might have fudged on that a couple times, but we generally kept to, when you're in high school, one sport a year. That's all you can do. And that's what our rule was. I felt it worked pretty well, because that way we're not spending our time running our kids around. We can actually have family time and still spend our time with our kids. Bedtime rituals, I think, are great. In our family, when our kids were growing up, we didn't have family devotions. Each child got the full attention of Cindy or me. So Cindy would be with Jenny while I would be with Daniel, putting them to bed. And after about 10 minutes or so, maybe 15, then we'd switch. So then I would be with Jenny and Cindy would be with Daniel. And so we kind of rotated like that. It was a pretty big ordeal. It was about 45 minutes on those nights. And we would read the kids' Bible to them, tell them make-believe stories, and pray and talk. And they really loved it. They begged us not to leave. Please, 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 please. You know how kids are. You're just like, you've got school tomorrow. You've got to go to sleep. Oh, Jenny would actually get out of bed and go by the door and block it like this every single night. She tried to not let me leave the room. And I would just encourage you to fight the temptation to cut this time short. We're tired. We've had a long day. They've had a long day. But it's such a great time. Kids want to open up and talk. And I would just encourage you not to cut that time short. Vacations together, adventures. We usually did camping or a cabin rather than a hotel room and TV. And sometimes we'd vacation with other families. Vacations have decreased in America. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the statistics. When the PC came out decades ago, the idea was, well, that means you're going to have more time. It'll take you less time to get your job done. You'll have more time for your families. You'll be able to have more vacations. Well, the exact opposite has happened in our culture. Fewer vacations in America. One vacation, Daniel found a box turtle, and we kept it. We took it home and took care of it, and it became a hobby. And so we learned all about how to take care of box turtles, how to hibernate them outside in the wintertime. You had to go, 2 feet deep and bury them in the wintertime. And Daniel was like, this isn't going to work. They're going to die. You know, and the springtime comes, we dig out the turtle. He's all alive and doing real well. It was just a great experience. Adventures versus hotel rooms and screens. I'd like to finish up with talking about bringing kids into your ministry. A lot of us, we feel like we're Christian workers here. And it's important to bring your kids into your ministry. You don't want to give your impressions that, oh, mom and dad are going off doing their God thing and I have to stay home. Try to bring them with you whenever possible. Our field was junior high ministry. We did that for a couple decades, Cindy and I. So we had weekly blowout meetings on Sunday nights. And for several years, when the kids were really little, we brought them with us, and we had organized on-site baby care there for all the leaders' kids. And so that way, our kids could see what we were doing. And it wasn't just something way out there. They didn't feel resentful that we were going off doing God's thing while they had to stay at home. I think HOP is really good for this. You get to bring your kids with you so they can see what's going on. We would come home from blowout. Our kids would pray with us for other kids that we were burdened for in the junior high. So we are bringing them into our ministry through prayer, having them pray for the kids that we're praying for. And they did it. They liked it. Cell group at our house. They would have to learn how to be considerate and how not to just take over the whole house. They had to be respectful. The junior high kids were having their teaching in the family room. We had to do our thing in another room and just be really considerate. So that, I thought that was good. And we also brought them to our junior high blowout camp for, I think I was thinking about this last night, for 15 years. We brought them to junior high summer camp. And that was no small ordeal. Cindy and I were leading the junior high summer camp. And so we had to get everything prepared for that, which was, you know, it was kind of difficult. But then we also had to pack up our kids and take care of our kids and figure out how we're going to do the kids at camp. And I feel like it was really worth it. It was no small ordeal. And the cabins there were not luxury cabins. Some of you have been to Camp Ohio. And so our family stayed in the bullpen, which is a cabin. And we would put all three kids in this one little room in the back, spiders, webs, really crappy facility. And we had to lay some of our kids on these little mattresses on the floor in that room and then get them up really early and so we could go to the mess hall for breakfast with 200 loud screaming kids. And you're just like, is this going to damage my kids? It was kind of scary. But they adjusted. The kids adjusted. They loved it. And by the time our kids were in junior high, they knew Camp Ohio backwards and forwards. So they're like, oh, yeah, I know this place. Come on, I'll show you all the tricks here. We brought them on mission trips. When our kids were really, really young, preschool and maybe kindergarten, we brought them to Haiti. And Jenny, she was five. She almost picked up a tarantula. We're like, no, don't pick that up. She was like, oh, look, a spider. Stop. And so it's kind of scary because you in these places you have poor medical care, and they were scared at times, our kids, so it was a good time to help talk them through their fears. On those trips, they got to see poverty, which I think is really good. We took them to junior high one or two mission trips to Appalachia, again, where they got to see a lot of poverty. They were really young at the time, but they got to be with us. They got to hear the gospel message all the time, of course. And so what we were trying to do is teach our kids to be givers, not takers. And that's why we would bring them into our ministry. And yes, we have the familial, the tribal love in our family. But that tribal love, as Cindy had a quote from, I think, Edith Schaefer or somebody, was to learn to get that tribal love, to have it, to experience, so that they then could give it out to the rest of the world. Yeah. So I think that was good, and I'm very happy that our kids are walking with God now. I feel like God and the body of Christ did a whole lot to make that happen. You know, they're all trying to disciple. They all disciple. So I feel pretty happy about that. Here's that same Proverbs verse. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it's in your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, come back tomorrow and I will give it, when you have it with you, and we do have it with us. God put us on this earth. He made us parents so that we could do just that, to parent our kids and love them. Let's do as much as we can not to ship them off for someone else to parent. I know some of us don't have the ability, and we're in different circumstances, and that's okay, but whatever time you do have, try to do as much as possible as you can to parent like this.